Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Roundtable. It's another week down. We are in the month of January 2025. Happy New Year. Here we go, folks. The run to the playoffs is on. And your guess is as good as mine as to how this whole thing is going to turn out. Just when we think we know the answers, this competition changes the questions. If you had have picked the 15 loss in a row against Taipans to go to Wollongong and beat the Illawarra Hawks, I just have one question. Please get in touch with me on Twitter, at Julian Marcus, and please, please tell me the lotto numbers for tomorrow night, because I could really do with a solid. Matt McQuaid is here. You may notice something different about Matt this week. Yeah. He's playing hurt, but he's got the smooth, soulful tones going this week that we're all going to enjoy. Yeah,
That's right, Julian.
How you doing, my man?
I'm all right, mate. Well, not really. I'm struggling a bit, but hey, it was it's too hard to pass up an opportunity to speak about this league and where it's going. And based off what we saw this week, quite remarkable. And as you mentioned, I mean, one of the biggest upsets in NBL history. There's no two ways about that. You know, a team on a 15-game losing streak coming up against a team that had just lost at home, needed to get back in the winner's circle against a team that, you know, really most people had given up on. And yet they give up an unbelievable 40 points, Illawarra, in that third period, changed the complete complexion of the game and just made some very uncharacteristic boneheaded plays. One person in particular we'll get to in a minute. But and then copped an absolute bollocking from their head coach in the post-game press conference. He was not impressed, to say the least, and basically said, we're in a position now where we can let it go, you know, I mean, and waste this, which is clearly not what they want. So, yeah, and not just that game. There were some others which were, you know, completely eye-opening, and you just say, my God, as you mentioned, who the heck can pick this competition? I mean, let alone, you know, champions. I mean, what about who's going to make the top two? No one knows, you know, and if you think you've got a handle on it, well, yeah, I've got some swampland in Florida I'd like to sell you. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's great for the league, I mean, in that respect, because it means what, you know, from the competition perspective, it means that every game, you know, they talk about every game matters. Well, right up until the final round, every game will matter for a whole bunch of teams. So pretty much the seven, I still think it's probably a seven-team race now, but there's probably one in those bottom three that could still make a run.
The nine-loss club now consists of Melbourne, Sydney, Perth, and Tasmania. Four teams on nine losses. Illawarra on seven losses. South East Melbourne on 10 losses. Brisbane and Adelaide on 11 losses. And even the Breakers hovering around on 12, even though if the Breakers get in, I think that would be the biggest shock of all. I don't see it, but this is tis the season, apparently, to just completely flip everything on its head. But it is so razor thin now. The margins are so finite that it really does have that feeling now going home that there's going to be, you'd say if it was in AFL, it'd be an 8-point game. In soccer, it'd be the classic 6-point game. Games seem to count for double now because teams are going to be taking wins off other teams. It just has such an elevated sense of importance now. And I feel like we get to this point every year, but there seems to be a bit of an added intensity to it this time around because of the fact, I think anyway, Matt, that there has been no true standout for an extended period. Everybody's got their warts. I mean, Illawarra have been the standout for the last little while, but they're starting to dip a bit. Before that was Melbourne, and they've completely cratered. There's no standout team. It feels like if you get into the six, you're just as good of a chance of winning it.
Yeah, no doubt. And there's no question that if you finish sixth and you've got, you know, one sudden death game after another to get to the semis, you've still got a chance. And it's, as I mentioned, I mean, the competition, Larry Kestelman and the rest of them would be absolutely beside themselves because they want a league like this where they can push that narrative that it's anyone's league, anyone's competition, because it keeps the interest, you know, for longer. And that's where sometimes, you know, if you've got a standout, you know, juggernaut team, it can feel a little bit, I mean, not boring, but there's less intrigue, if you like. You know, that's the thing. And we've got enormous intrigue, you know, across the board. And as we've seen, particularly in the, you know, the mixed round, because it's, as you mentioned, it's like one game melding into the next one. But that's great too, because, you know, we've got something to talk about just about every night for the next couple of weeks. And yeah, it's, as I said, anybody who's got it, who thinks they've got a handle on this, well, you know, good luck to you. But I certainly don't. And yeah, some of my predictions really went in the tank, but I suspect quite a few people did over the last week or so.
So I'm just looking at the tables from the last little while, and particularly, you know, this decade. Aside from NBL 21, where Melbourne were the juggernaut at 28-8, and then, you know, Perth 25-11 were the next nearest, and it felt like it was just a case of skip to the end. Well, then you got NBL 22. Sydney won it from third place. I mean, there is history of this in recent years. Sydney won it from third in NBL 22. They won it from top spot in NBL 23, but New Zealand and Cairns were both one game away from them when things came to its conclusion. And then last year, Tasmania won it from third. So I'm looking at who's in third place at the moment. Oh, wouldn't you know that? It's the Sydney Kings. Just wondering if there's a bit of serendipity about finishing third in recent times.
Yeah.
We've got to start, though, this week. Where else are we going to start? With Cairns. With the Cairns Taipans. Because we spoke last week about just the horrible run they've been on. And I feel partially guilty because, again, we've referred to it throughout the year. We came on here, I think it was late October, early November, sang their praises for half an hour, and then they didn't win a game again for 3 months. So, how bad. But I have not been this shocked after a result of NBL basketball since the night that Tasmania came to Melbourne in Game 3 of the semi-final series a couple of years ago. And you'd be better placed to be able to compare this in the realms of history, but that feeling of jaw on the floor I have not had since that particular night. And then I go back even further and I think of the Sydney run in Game 1 of the 2020 semi-final series against Melbourne where they came from nowhere to win it. Jaw on the floor, just the surprise. But this feels like a whole different scenario because they were semi-final games. This is a team that lost 15 straight going into the house of the number one seed who had just lost a game, mind you, and we expected them to come out and turn Cairns into a fine paste, and it didn't happen.
No, and look, at the end of the day, you kind of look at the first half. You know, I mean, Illawarra led, what was it, 56-45. So they had that 11-point lead at the half and well in control. And you know, the Taipans were playing, you know, not too bad, but you kind of never felt that Illawarra was out of it, or out of control, rather. And the Taipans were kind of just hanging in there. But then the third quarter happened, and it was, talk about jaw-dropping. I could not believe what happened to the Hawks. You know, their defensive intensity dropped away dramatically. Their physicality dropped away. Their confidence, which I've talked a lot about over the last, you know, 3 to 4 weeks, just all of a sudden took a hit. And you could see them start to second-guess themselves. So Cairns puts on this absolute show of a third period, drops 40 for the first time in about 17 years, I believe, in a quarter. So, and then all of a sudden you look up and it's like, oh my goodness, Cairns, they've got a chance here. They can win this. Illawarra, you know, obviously tried to respond and did respond despite some absolute, you know, stupidity, which I'll get to in a minute. But the reality is, if you're up 105-101 with whatever it was, 20 seconds left, and then, you know, you give them the ball and Rob Edwards hits one of the biggest triples of the season, and all of a sudden it's kind of like, oh my goodness, you know, what the hell's going on here? And, you know, it's a 4-point, I think it was a 4-point play. So anyway, it was hit a big three, and then, you know, Dave O'Hickey, who we've been very, very complimentary of, and a lot of people, myself included, think he's probably going to win Sixth Man of the Year. But first of all, he does the bonehead play to kick Pedro Bradshaw. That was one thing, which was, you know, look, I've said this before. The one problem with Davo is that he can be a hothead. He can be, and he plays with his heart on his sleeve, and I admire that. But there are times where he's taken it too far. So that was one thing. And then throwing the ball away, with, you know, that set up that 3-point basket to turn the whole thing around was just craziness. And again, you know, it's unusual for this team not to execute down the stretch, because we've seen it time and time again, right? But it just shows you, like everybody else, they've got warts. And if they don't play a certain way, and Justin Tatum, you know, was really peeved in the press conference. If they don't come out with the requisite intensity and the requisite energy and, you know, execute properly and all of those things, they're every chance to lose any game, even at home. And the problem they've got is that, you know, you kind of look at them and think, wow, this team should be awesome at home. They've got this amazing crowd. The fan base is completely locked into them. Unfortunately, they haven't been good at home. They've been better on the road, strangely enough. So they've got a huge game coming up now. You know, look, losing three straight on at home at the Sandpit it's kind of a non-negotiable, particularly, you know, given the fact that you mentioned before, there's four teams that are now two losses behind them. So they had an opportunity to lock this thing away as far as home court advantage throughout the playoffs, and they failed to do so. And now the questions are about, okay, are they going to step up to what level they were when they were going through that brilliant five-game winning streak that had me saying that they're not a championship favorite, they're the championship favorite. And suddenly you look at it and say, you can't say that anymore. You really can't.
Just look at where we are now. We're recording this on the 6th of January. So the last game of the regular season is February 8th here in Melbourne, and it's a throwdown, United and Phoenix. What I'm interested to see now, I was going to say fascinated again, but I've said fascinated about 500 times in the last three episodes. What I'm looking for now is who's going to step up from here? We're in the last month of the season, and like you said, every team has got warts. Illawarra, Melbourne's in second place despite losing five of the last six and looking awful. Sydney, we'll get onto their performance in a minute. Perth, Tasmania, Southeast Melbourne look the most promising, but that can it seemingly changes by the week.
Yeah.
So who's going to step up? Because we've reached that time now. We're reaching nut-cutting time. Talk about with teams needing to bring in players, the seven-game qualification window. So we're talking about, okay, we're getting to the point where teams, we know who they're going to be rolling with now. What are we going to see out of the next five or six games? That's going to be really interesting to me to see if there is a team that does step up to the mark, or if it's going to continue like this and we get to the last round of the season, we get into the playoffs, and it's still a case of one week it's one team and another week it's another.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you look for is, when you're analysing all of these teams, is where's the upside coming from, right? So you mentioned the Kings before. So potentially, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, I'm just saying it's another body that they're adding to the mix. But Lamonte Turner is a new import coming in as a point guard. And look, you can have your arguments about what they need. Do they need a big? Do they need an extra ball handler to take some pressure off Jalen Adams, who's been incredible of late? But there could be potential upside. I actually think there's a lot of upside with the Kings. Feel we haven't seen, now I'm not saying it's going to happen, I'm just saying that they've got scope for huge improvement offensively. Defensively, I think for the most part they're okay. They had a few issues in both their comeback wins, where, you know, the D-trans wasn't really up to snuff. I felt like, you know, their ball containment at times let them down, particularly against the Phoenix, but then they've been seemingly figuring this thing out on the fly and turn into that amazing, you know, 38-16 final quarter. And Jalen Adams just has an out-of-body experience. So, but it's everybody else, right? Where's the upside for the Hawks? Probably execution under fire. That might be that, you know, execution under adversity, which they haven't really faced all that much, or hadn't before the last two games. Melbourne, it's people like Jack White, who's been down of late. And then, and I've said this before, I'm not, you know, I love Matt Dellavedova to death, but I'm sort of looking at him thinking that he's been down as well. And then they probably need more consistent input from the two bigs if they're going to, you know, be that juggernaut team again. Yeah, and just sort of going down the line, Adelaide, well, you know, that's just going to be the guys, the big three, you have to say, which is obviously Montrezl Harrell, Kendrick Davis, and Dejan Vasiljevic. But it's what can they get out of everybody else to raise a level, particularly Jarrell Martin, because we certainly haven't seen the best of him yet. So that's what I look at. I kind of look at it and go, where's the upside coming from these teams? And that, it look, there's no guarantee by any stretch, even if I think that the Kings have got more to give than, you know, a lot of other teams. But it's just, I'm kind of looking at it. You've got to have some sort of level. You've got to have some sort of standard, because otherwise it's just a massive crapshoot, this league. So that's what I look at. You know, what's Illawarra, as I said, Sydney, Melbourne, how much is left in Tasmania? And then obviously Southeast Melbourne, they've started playing D. They're executing probably better than anybody in the league right now. So that's how I look at it from that perspective. But hey, the reality is, Julian, who the hell knows right now?
It's all over the shop, and it's a beautiful thing to watch, because it feels like, at least in my time covering the league, it's about as open as it's ever been. But if you're a fan riding the ups and downs with your team, if you're trying to be a pundit and predict what's going to happen, good luck. But it's a beautiful time of year, and it's only going to get even better as we rip through the month of January and what's on the other side. I just want to go back to that performance in Cairns from the Taipans. For them as a club, for them as a unit, and for Adam Ford as a coach, for the remainder of the season and then heading into what will be an off-season of great interest to see which direction that the club goes in, going into NBL 26. What does this mean to get a win like this the way that they did?
Well, I think what's interesting is if you watch the post-game press conference, Fordy basically said, I don't care if you're late for the plane, go and enjoy yourselves. I think you lose 15 straight, and it's just that it's hard as a player, because you keep hearing the message over and over again from Fordy, but we're still not successful. We're not winning, right? From that perspective, you know, I'm not surprised that he said what he said. You know, look, I don't care if they're late for the flight. I'll see him back in Cairns. Go out and enjoy yourselves. Because when you know that obviously there's, you know, you're not going to make the playoffs or the play-in tournament, you're done for the year very early in the piece, you know, 6 weeks out, basically. It is very, very difficult to have that kind of level of motivation. And I think he did an amazing job to keep the belief up, because, as I mentioned, I mean, they're down double figures at the half, and everyone's thinking, oh, this thing's, it's done. But it wasn't. And they came back and put on a show against an Illawarra team that didn't have their eyes on the ball. And, you know, you can talk about motivation for them. You can talk about taking it easy. You can talk about all those things. Cairns still had to do what they did, which is fantastic. Look, it doesn't, in the scheme of things for NBL 25, it probably doesn't mean all that much. I just was incredibly happy for 40 to get that W in that environment. And then, obviously, really happy for my guy, Alexander Higgins-Titcher, who once again showed, you know, what a talent he is. And, you know, to come off the bench with 14 huge points, 5 of 8 from the field, and, you know, hit a three and, you know, had a block shot, had an assist. I mean, you know, this kid, I've been very high on for a number of years, obviously, you know, been pretty close to him when he was at the NOS Bulls in NBL 1 East. So for him to do that was fantastic, because one of the problems with the Taipans has been just they don't have the depth of other clubs. And that's what's really killed them, in particular, when they've had all those, you know, those injuries. And then, yeah, Taron Armstrong, just an absolute superstar. You know, 28-6-3. He was outstanding. Rob Edwards, who's been, you know, probably not as effective as I thought he was going to be, but he came through. You know, when it absolutely mattered, hit that monster three to completely turn everything around. And then obviously, you know, Armstrong has those three free throws down the stretch, goes 10 of 11 from the line. So, yeah. Great to see those guys. I mean, Tanner Groves played, he was ill, but he was fantastic. 17 points, 9 rebounds. So it's great to see. It really is. It's a great little story. How many games will they win the rest of the year? Probably not many, but at least they showed themselves they can be competitive if they approach things in the right way with anybody in the National Basketball League.
So from a Hawks perspective, to lose the way that they did, it just made you shake your head. It just really made you shake your head. I can imagine what Justin Tatum must have been thinking after that. But a loss like that, I mean, we knew the Hawks were going to have a little bit of a dip at some point. They had been at such a high level for such a long time. And, you know, they'd lost that great game, that classic contest against the Phoenix a couple of nights earlier. But to lose like that, take us through what on earth went wrong. Because it just felt like they froze a little bit. Just
yeah, I don't know
silly
about
errors.
Right.
Silly
yeah,
errors.
I don't know about, yeah. Oh, look, you know, that's probably a little fair, but I don't think it was freezing. I just think that they didn't respond well when Cairns punched him in the mouth in that third. And, you know, it was a similar situation against the Phoenix on New Year's Eve, which was a brilliant game. But I felt like the Phoenix were the better team and deserved to win. But you think from an Illawarra perspective, you come in and you got to take care of business against a team that's lost 15 straight. And I think, as Justin Tatum said, that you know, you don't want them to let this fall away, which they kind of did in that ball game. So yeah, it was a really disappointing performance. As I said, you know, there was plenty of blame to go around. They didn't play hard enough for long enough. They had a lot of guys that were down. Obviously, you know, Sam Frohlin going 1 for 7, 5 points and 8 rebounds. He was, you know, for him, as well as he's played this year, that was disappointing. Mason Peatling just, you know, made a lot of mistakes, unfortunately, and, you know, ended up not scoring. So he still plays D for the most part, but couldn't make up for it. And, you know, look, Hyung Jung Lee and Darius Days really carried them when they needed to. So, yeah, I mean, as I said, it was, you know, they do – one of the things is that they do rely very heavily on Harvey and Kel. And why not? You know, they've been the best backcourt in the league. And, I mean, in that game, you know, Kel – didn't shoot the ball out that great, but nearly had a triple-double, 9 rebounds, 6 assists. But, you know, I said with Davo Hickey, and I've said this before, I mean, I'm a fan of Davo, but, excuse me, he does have that propensity to make boneheaded, rash decisions. One of them was kicking out at Pedro Bradshaw. That was ridiculous. But then on that inbound pass, just got kind of throwing it into the front court in hope, has it picked up. And the next thing you know, Rob Edwards is hitting a triple. I mean, I'm not going to say Hickey cost them the game. As I said, there was plenty of blame to go around. But sure as hell didn't help them. You know, I mean, it was a very disappointed. Look, again, he's been terrific. And it's one game, right? Other than that, I mean, he's been fantastic. And either most improved or sixth man of the year, he's got to be in consideration for both, I believe. It's just that on this occasion, they couldn't overcome his boneheaded plays. That's what, you know, in the end, particularly that last play that he made. So I'm sure he'll bounce back. I'm sure that Justin will have a chat to him about it. And yeah, I'll expect them to come out all guns blazing in their next home game.
Speaking of which, comes Tuesday night against the Jag Jumpers. Talk about contests. That's going to be an absolute beauty. And we'll get to that a little bit later on. The team that went into Wollongong on New Year's Eve and beat them in a game that you called so well with Troy Pillen was the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. And that game was such high quality. And a lot of the games in recent times have been, particularly since the FIBA break. I've really enjoyed the high octane energy that the NBL has had, particularly on the scoring end after it started a little bit down when it came to scoring. And this was just yet another example. The Phoenix, I find them so interesting to watch because you get a win like that, and then you go into Sydney, they look home and hosed, they get overwhelmed by a Sydney performance that seemingly came from the great beyond when their season looked like it was on the precipice. They roar into that juggernaut that we thought they might be. And then they follow that up by going to Tasmania and kicking the pants out of the Jack Jumpers. What a week for the Phoenix.
Yeah, if you remember, I tipped the Phoenix against Tasmania because I thought that was a bad matchup for Tasmania. I just didn't know how they were going to cope with the size of Hunter and Hurt's ability at about 6'9", 6'10", to stretch the floor the way he does. They just didn't have matchups for those guys without Moole Magnay in particular. And look, Ian Hummer's a nice piece. He's really just a role player, and I know that's kind of damning with faint praise, but as an import, that's what he is. I mean, Scott's even said that, but he'll be good for them, you know. And I've liked what I've seen out of him. But that game against Illawarra, and yeah, I appreciate the shout out, and it was so much fun to call because it was such a high quality game, and a game where yeah, the Phoenix kind of jumped them early, and but Illawarra, as they want to do, kept fighting and found a way to get it back. You know, the Phoenix were up by 12 at one stage, I think, in the third, and Illawarra came right back at them through, you know, Harvey and yeah, Sam Froling had a double-double, and you know, you talk about Dave O'Hickey, he was sensational in that game. You know, 18 points, gave the crowd a massive boost, and they, you know, they love how he plays, which is completely balls to the wall, massive energy and all of that. That's why, you know, when I'm critical of him, I'm going to give him his flowers as well. So that, you know, it was such a well-played game. But the Phoenix, man, I mean, you just wouldn't believe the turnaround. Obviously, the big story, Joe Wieskamp off the bench, just hit three massive threes, 22 points, hit 8 of 13 from the field. He was brilliant. But the man who essentially just controlled everything was Derek Walt Jr. You know, 17 points, 11 assists, and they couldn't stop him in the second half. And then, you know, another guy who has come in for criticism quite a lot over the years, Nathan Sobey. I can't go past him. I thought he was sensational as well. I mean, 25 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. But the thing about Nathan was I really liked how he controlled himself. How, yeah, you know, my big criticism of him is that there are times where he goes into what I call Russell Westbrook mode, which is it's up to me. I have to do everything. Even in a team with all this talent, he still has done that. And we can get onto that game against the Kings, particularly in the fourth quarter. But for that night in Wollongong, he was brilliant, Nathan. Absolutely brilliant. And I was so impressed. And again, drives me nuts, Julian. You see what he's capable of and what he has been capable of over the years. You know, and he's a great player, but you know, there's always been that thing with him. It's more, you know, between the ears than anything else with Nathan, because he's as talented as they get, but sometimes forces too much. He certainly didn't do that against Illawarra. So brilliant performance against them. And then they dominated Tasmania. They just took Tasmania to the woodshed, behind the woodshed, kicked the crap out of them. And so to go into an environment which is probably the best home court environment in the league, and to put on 105 and just really just, I mean, the game was probably over in the first quarter. I mean, I know that Tasmania came back and made a game of it, but the reality is that the Phoenix were just far too good. And again, you know, Josh King is doing a fantastic job. I mean, it's so rare to have an interim head coach come in mid-season and for this to happen to a group like that that was so downtrodden, 0-5, oh my God, what's going to happen? But I think, you know, Sam McKinnon deserves a lot of credit in stepping up to the plate and taking them to a 2-1 record, including a win over Melbourne, mind you. So, which, again, that was one of the biggest upsets I think the NBL's seen in many, many years. But they are a huge threat, the Phoenix. They're an enormous threat this year.
What story would be if it turns out that it's the Phoenix of all teams that end up lifting the trophy at the end of it? Never mind the fact that the Phoenix winning the title would be a story in itself. This is a team, again, we need to scream it from the rooftops. They were 0-5. They looked shot to bits. They were gone. Mike Kelly was sacked. And here they are.
Yeah, and by the way, what player changes did they make?
Yeah. None.
Not a one. And you know, look, Simon Mitchell, our good friend, was very steadfast on that. He said, this is about the coaching. It's not about the playing group. So it shows you they were right to recruit the guys they did. I mean, if Wieskamp can bring what he brought against the Hawks on a more consistent basis, this team's going to be really hard to beat, because they've already got the Walton Jr. Sobey backcourt is starting to work. Angus Glover has been great for most of the year. Jordan Hunter is clearly one of the best bigs in the league. Matt Hurt, you know, top 10 in the league scoring and rebounding. They've Owen Foxwell stepping up. Tommy Vidanovic, you know, quietly goes about his business, but he's that terrific role player that I've spoken about is so important for a championship level team. They've got a lot of weapons, and now Josh King's got them playing tough D for the most part. They've still got a bit, and there's still some upside there. You know, I talked about upside before. So, yeah, it's going to be a great story, I think, to moving forward, the Phoenix.
So tell me what happened in the fourth quarter against the Sydney Kings.
Jalen Adams happened. That was one thing. Unbelievable, you know. And what was interesting, sometimes with those things, it sort of becomes a bit of an avalanche, and, you know, you sort of look up and they're only down 10, but it was kind of, you know, after being down 18, they were down by 13 at the end of three. And then, you know, but the fourth quarter was really fascinating to me because it was the Kings just did it, the old cliche, one play at a time. They really did. They didn't try and, you know, knock down wild threes or anything. They actually played pretty controlled basketball, I felt. They certainly lifted the intensity defensively. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, they were fortunate that Nathan a couple of times did turn back into Russell Westbrook. You know, and I felt like the Phoenix just kind of lost their way, but the Kings just kept putting heat, more heat, and did it in a very controlled manner. It wasn't something where they were just going crazy for 5 minutes and hitting five threes or whatever. It was more just one play at a time, executing, getting good looks, and then getting stops at the other end. Pretty basic basketball, really. But then, you know, you obviously have to talk about Jalen Adams and his performance. 21 fourth quarter points, the most ever in a fourth quarter by a Sydney Kings player in franchise history. Unbelievable. And then the equal most ever in any quarter, you know, dating back to 1997 when Isaac Burton did it for the Kings against the Illawarra Hawks at the old Snake Pit. So, yeah, incredible. And then hit 17 free throws again. And we're talking about a 40-minute game, mind you. So 17 free throws, the most ever by a Sydney Kings player in NBL history again. And then 18 attempts, which was the equal most attempts ever. So he makes one. And he's got the other all-time record, which is 100% record, because if he goes 18 for 18, he beats the existing record, which is 14 for 14 back in 2001, I believe. So, yeah, fantastic performance by Jalen. But really, the entire team stepped up and executed beautifully. And they're turning into this fourth quarter team where if you think you've got them beaten, well, clearly, the answer is you don't have them beaten, and you need to be fighting all the way to the finish line against this team. So, yeah, because they've done it, yeah, so many times this year.
They went and did it to Brisbane straight after this.
Yeah, they played horribly. I mean, they were awful against Brisbane for three quarters. Anyway, I felt like, you know, you look at the stats. I mean, my God, they gave up 29 offensive rebounds. They missed 13 free throws. They had one horrific turnover after another, it seemed, in the first three periods. And it was, you know, if you're a Kings fan, you would have been incredibly frustrated. But again, despite all that, they showed a lot of character, you know, which, you know, they haven't always done this year. But I think it's a sign that they're starting to come together as a group. And sometimes, you know, going on the road like that against a team that was, let's face it, fairly desperate. They, from a talent perspective, they're not in the same league as the Kings. Even though I think, you know, and I've said this before, I think the Kings' overall talent's been a bit overrated, in all honesty. And by the way, so does Brian Georgian. But yeah, they just, again, they figured it out. They've got, look, Adams is a great point guard, and that helps among, it'll be really interesting to see how this whole system will change when they're bringing another import point guard. Now, I know the reasons for it. They want to play Adams off the ball, but Adams has always been a guy that needs the ball in his hands. So he's a kind of high volume, high usage guy as well, even though he's a brilliant facilitator, don't get me wrong. But yeah, that's going to be a fascinating watch for mine. But again, they just work it out. They've figured it out. And as I said, I think, you know, you add Cameron Oliver now starting is probably the one of the, you know, it's a positive. I mean, as far as Kelly Lepepe's injury is concerned, it basically meant Brian Georgian had no other choice but to start Oliver. And the last couple of games, he's been very good. He's still not as dominant as what you'd expect. But against Brisbane, I thought, you know, he was under control. made some shots, 6 of 9, 14 points, you know, grabbed 9 rebounds, a couple of offensive, had a steal, had a block. So he impacted the game in different ways. And I thought played hard, you know, and I haven't, in all honesty, been able to say that too many times about Cam this year. You know, I think, and then that's the reason he hasn't been playing that much, because with Brian Gorge in, yeah, it's a prerequisite. You got to play with maximum effort. I've said it a million times, but it's true. But I give him his props. You know, I think he's been really good. And if that can hit, if they can get that consistency of effort from Cam Oliver the rest of the way, you bring in and if the important, I know that that's the big ifs, I get it, but they're in a position where, you know, they can put heat not just on the top two, but on the top one, particularly given Illawarra's recent struggles.
Brisbane have dropped 3 in a row. I looked at the box score at the end of the game just to see the usage of Josh Adams against Casey Prather. Prather had 24 field goal attempts, Josh Adams 10. Is that a bit of a clue as to how things are going to play out?
Not necessarily. I think it's Adams' first game, right? And he'd not long stepped off the plane. So it's gone are the days when you can, you know, get off the plane and drop 50 on someone, as has happened. Yeah, I mean, he hit his first three, and a three with his first touch, rather, and you think, oh, my God, you know, look out, Josh is back. But, yeah, he kind of struggled to find his feet. So I think it's more of a watch down the track. Yeah, 24 shots between 15 and 20 is probably right for Casey, the way he's been playing. Keandre Cook's been, you know, a bit up and down, and certainly not that efficient. He was 3 of 15, so they want to spread that load a bit more, I would think. But yeah, it's still an interesting watch, but it's only the first game.
Brisbane dropping 2 games below 500. Where are they now in your estimation? They've got New Zealand on Wednesday night. That they have to win that, surely.
They have to win it. Look, I mean, let's be honest. I think it's a 7-team league right now, and I think they're one of the teams looking on the outside looking in. I really do. They don't have the overall depth that other teams do, and it hurt them against the Kings. Although, you know, bringing Josh Bannon off the bench, and he was solid, you know, 13-13 double-double, even though the Kings couldn't box out to save their life, that's still pretty impressive. But overall, you kind of look up and down that bench. You know, look, Dengadel started well, had a couple of threes, but was invisible after that. Only, you know, played 15 minutes. But they don't have the depth, and that's going to really catch up with them at the end of the day. I think they're out of it, but they're not out of it, of course. As we've sort of talked about throughout this podcast, they've got some work to do if they're going to make a run at it. Is Josh Adams going to help them? Yeah, potentially he might, but I just can't see it. I really can't.
What the heck has happened with Melbourne? This was a team that were initially a championship favourite. They were the championship favourite before Illawarra took that. Then they went on that skid at home, and then they get absolutely blown apart by an Adelaide side, which we knew were going to be fired up for this game. We knew that, but it's a different feel about this ball club now. Over the last month, it just feels like it's gone off the rails a bit as far as where things were at. This was a team that was humming, and now it's clunky. Like you mentioned, Jack White isn't quite getting the production that he was. They don't have that fear factor about them right now, especially on defense.
They've lost an edge. I was watching that game, and look, you know, Golding, Christopher is still deadly. You know, coming off those sort of staggered doubles and the curls that he runs, and he's so good without the basketball. But and I liked what Tanner Cribbs did off the bench. But just as a collective, I'm looking at this team and think they have lost their edge. They really did. I mean, they were what, 12-4, and I think you and I both said, "My God, you know, this team is a juggernaut. Who's going to stop them? You know, they're just loaded. Jack White is doing Jack White things." But then, you know, Jack played just 16 minutes. 4 personal fouls, ended up with 3 points, 9 boards. Rob Lowe, 12 boards, led them in that category. But, yeah, it was only 2 of 8 from the field. And then Marcus Lee, just, you know, 5 and 5 as an import, probably not going to get it done. Ian Clark struggled as well of late. I think that's got a bit to do with it. And as I said, I mean, look, Delhi is magnificent. I love him to death. You know, we'll always have the highest of regard for him. But Father Time is undefeated, as they say. And I think he's such a big part of that unit, you know, providing that kind of energy. You know, as I said, you know, he's Matthew is like Damo. You know, I've always said that. The kind of inspirational leader, not the greatest of shooters, but an incredible defender, a great facilitator, a man that can say, you know, jump on my back, boys, and carry them. But I'm not seeing that from Matt, and I haven't seen it for most of the year. I had to laugh about Shay Ely being booed. The Adelaide fans, you know, they absolutely gave it to him, and he's played pretty well. Certainly, you know, didn't facilitate very well, although, you know, Matt made up for that with his 9 assists, but Ely just with a 1 assist, and, you know, that kind of not hurt them, but, you know, they ended up, I think it was 18 assists on 31 made field goals, which is pretty good overall. But again, I just felt like they've lost something. Can they get it back? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jack White's going to be a huge key to that, I believe. They need to get more out of Lee and Rob Lowe up front, especially against the likes of a, you know, Southeast Melbourne Phoenix is one prime example. But yeah, it's a strange thing. And, you know, you kind of look at their current run. And as we said last week, they've just started a 7-game road trip. And it's not going to be easy by any stretch. You know, you kind of look at what they've got. Obviously, you know, Sydney coming up. We'll get to that in a moment. New Zealand is a game they should definitely win. But New Zealand showed against Perth that, you know, they're not going to give up without a fight. And they had some, you know, they were close, you know, in that third and fourth quarter. But once Matt Mooney went out, that was it for them. But you would think Melbourne gets that one. But then, of course, then you've got Illawarra and Perth back-to-back. That's tough, man. You know, they go to Illawarra, then they jump on a plane and head to Perth and play the Wildcats in that absolute nut house that it will be, I'm sure, in ROC Arena. So, yeah, I think Thursday night against the Kings is going to tell us a lot about them. I really do, because that's one. It's for second place, you know, and then they lose that, they fall behind, and all of a sudden you're kind of thinking, wow, I mean, you can't expect them not to make at least the play-in tournament, but it probably would be harder for them to make the top two and get that at least home court advantage in the semifinals.
I don't think they'll miss the six. I think they're too good a team to miss the six.
Yeah, but I'd agree with that.
It has the elements of a crossroads game, that one on Thursday against the Kings. Mm. I said that about the Sydney Southeast Melbourne game. It felt like a crossroads moment. Well, yeah, we saw how Southeast Melbourne responded, so not necessarily for them, but it did feel like a crossroads moment for the Sydney Kings. And
I agree with Brisbane, that. They were staring at the precipice, Julian. They really were, you know, through three quarters. And I just have been, when they got out by 18, the Phoenix, I thought, that's it. But yeah, the Kings, of course, bounced back in spectacular fashion. But it's a crossroads game for both of them still, I believe.
Yeah.
One of the games of the year, without a doubt.
I think Melbourne's got more at stake, though, at this particular point in time. I feel more confident about what Sydney have got than what Melbourne have got. But hey, Melbourne go up to Sydney, they get a win there. That will quieten a few doubts, but still, it's a rough run. It always is for Melbourne at this time of year, but the facts are they didn't bank enough wins at home, which we're used to seeing. They cash in a lot. Well,
that's the point.
They haven't won enough at home.
Yeah, and they've lost five of their last six overall.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and five straight road games before they return to JCA. Yeah, and the only win they've had in that run was Cairns, who at least that night looked kind of beaten down. So United should have beaten them. But it's amazing how it's changed for them. And they've got guys that are at the moment out of form, and they need to get back in form in a hurry.
They were humming along beautifully, and then Golden goes out of the lineup. Jack White goes out for a little bit, and then Rob Lowe goes out, and it feels like they just haven't gotten it back.
Yeah, they haven't gotten the chemistry back. Oh, I think that's fair as well. But look, we know what Chris Golding's all about. We know what Jack White's all about. So I'm far from writing them off. I'm just saying that it's going to be they're a very interesting watch for mine in the next couple of weeks, next probably 2 to 3 weeks.
I would say if they don't win, you mentioned Sydney, then you've got Illawarra and Perth. I think if they don't win two out of the three, I don't think they can finish in the top two, just with how tight things are at. Yeah. And particularly with Sydney making a run, Perth, even Tasmania, even the Phoenix. this is such a big couple of weeks for Melbourne. Such a big couple of weeks.
These road games, I think, given how close the competition is, I think 3-2 might keep them in calculations, but I think they need to win at least 4 of their next 5,
yeah,
to be honest, to make the 2. I really do.
And that is a byproduct of dropping games like the Cairns one back at the end of October, losing games like the Brisbane one, dropping their bundle in the second throwdown of the season and letting that one slip out of their hands. They didn't win enough home games. They didn't bank enough at the start, and now they've got to make up for it on the road. And it's a tough, tough ask for Melbourne. The Perth Wildcats, they've been going about their business quietly. They're 12
sneaky, which is unusual for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apart from Bryce's pyrotechnics, but yeah, you kind of look at them and think, oh, hang on a minute. They're starting to get this thing together.
12-9, 21 games in. Seen this one before, haven't we? Perth just creeping up and then they go bang. I'm starting to get a little wary of them. I know that there's plenty of warts with this team, but again, the Bryce Cotton, if it is the Bryce Cotton farewell tour, you think
he is something, hasn't it? If it is. We by the way, I hasten to add, I wasn't meaning to annoy our Perth fans and the Red Army by suggesting that he was going to go. I want him to stay, and I did say that, but I've heard from a couple of people, it's kind of like, don't say that, you know, and I don't want to say it, but it's, you know, it's my speculation, but and what he's done particularly, sort of he's raised the bar again. I didn't think it was possible. But yeah, they are very sneakily all of a sudden in fourth, and they've been doing it without Christian Doolittle, who's arguably their best defender, certainly their best two-way guy as an import. So, yeah, look out. I mean, Bryce was Bryce again. I mean, it's the great redundant statement to say that he's a legend and one of the greatest we've ever seen and just continues to amaze. You know, just the way he plays, the energy that he plays with, that amazing tank of his. You just go on and on and on down the lines. Great shooter, of course, and a great scorer. Certainly one of the greatest offensive weapons this country's ever seen, full stop. Maybe the best, you know, and that's as an import, certainly. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, you can't talk about, all-time greats without mentioning Drewy, but I'm talking purely as an import. And we have gone through this before, but I like where they're going. And I talked about upside earlier. I think one of the things with them, the upside's the D, right? Now, I know I said they've kind of accepted who they are as a unit, and I think that's one reason they've stepped up, that, you know, pretending that they're something they're clearly not, which is a lockdown defensive team. They're just going out there to basically blow you away offensively. But having said that, there are still tweaks to be made. And when Doolittle comes back, that'll really toughen their defensive approach. I've got no doubts about that. So if they can step up in that manner, you know, they've got a lot of games at home. They've got a 4-game, 5 of their last 6 are actually at home. And winnable games. They've got a lot of winnable games. Obviously, Tasmania is going to be tough on the road. Brisbane, who knows, but they should win that one. Adelaide's going to be an absolute war at home. Melbourne, the same. Cairns will give a great account of themselves, but Bryce is going to go for 45-plus, likely. He loves playing against the Taipans. And then, obviously, Southeast Melbourne at RAC is going to be huge. And then Sydney at Qdos Bank Arena in round 19. And you couldn't have picked a better, more intriguing game to finish for them than Adelaide at home. So they've got 2 games against Adelaide at home, so they can put Adelaide pretty much to bed, I would think, if they get those 2 wins. If they take care of business at home, they could easily finish top 2. And if that happens, and they've got home court for at least the semi-finals. And I know that they haven't exactly been a juggernaut there. It hasn't been the fortress RAC Arena in the last, 3 years probably? Certainly since Trevor left. So there's no guarantees of that. But I just think with Bryce and how much those people love the dude, and why wouldn't they? I just think the atmosphere is going to be what we saw with Trevor. And those, you know, magnificent, that dynasty, Wildcat dynasty that we saw when Trevor was there and before him, Bevo. So I've got a sneaking suspicion that they are going to come home absolutely like a train. And they're a team, for me, that could easily finish top 2. Look, they can still finish top 1. I mean, they're only 1 win behind. I mean, 2 losses, sure, but this is what Illawarra has begat, unfortunately. They've let everybody else in, and the hope springs eternal. And this Wildcat team, all they have to do is play defense at, you know, even a reasonable level. You know, they haven't been great defensively all year, but if they can do that, and as I said, Doolittle, when he comes back, is going to help massively with that, then this is a team that no one wants to play. You know, it's just, you know, try going over there for a playoff game and see what happens at RAC Arena. The Red Army will be down everybody's throats.
Yeah, I know what happens. I've seen this movie before. It's called End of Season Trip.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So, yeah, they're look out. That's all I can say about the Wildcats right now. And doing it so quietly was just so unlike them as a franchise, but even with Bryce's pyrotechnics. So, yeah.
And if this is, and it's an if, it's a big if, it's if this is the Bryce Cotton farewell tour, do you really think that his third and final act isn't going to be the biggest of all? I mean, come on now.
You can see it. Yeah. You can see it, Jimmy.
I could see him going for 60 at some point.
I said to you, you know, I think he's definitely going to go for a 50 plus at some stage when he feels like it.
Yep.
The only thing that'll stop him is that the one thing about him that's always really fascinated me is that he's this amazing scorer who happens to be incredibly unselfish as a ball player. To his detriment, I mean, he should have had 60 in that game. Let's be honest. I mean, the 59 was phenomenal, but he could have had 64, 65 if he'd, you know, taken a few shots himself. But as ever, looks for the better shot. You know, that's why he's one of the greatest we've ever seen.
Adelaide have got to walk into the Lions' Den with Perth before the season is over. With what they've got coming up and where they're at, I mean, I'm assuming you included them as part of the seven that are still in this competition, 9-11.
Yeah.
But they are 100%. Certainly playing from behind.
Yeah.
Have they got enough from what you've seen? Considering, look, I absolutely torched them on this program last week, and
probably
I stand
so
by every single word.
So did
of
I.
It. But I think that they are meeting the standards this week.
Yeah.
I think the standards are being met now. If that's going to be what they're going to do going
Maybe.
Forward.
Yeah, there's a few people that are still not sure about it. That I mean, obviously, the two games, they're on this two-game winning streak now after that debacle that they suffered. But beating the Kings at Qdos, and not only beating them, it was the first time the Kings have been really not particularly competitive in a game all year. They dominated that game. And really, it was, you know, they attacked Sydney's weaknesses, which, you know, were up front, or one of their weaknesses anyway, because they've got, you know, Montrez. They've got great size, you know, Jarrell Martin, Isaac Humphries, and all those guys, which is dominant, I thought. So then you go and the revenge tour game against Melbourne. They were fantastic. Now, part of it was what we've just talked about, that Melbourne kind of seemed to have lost their edge. But Adelaide just had absolutely no mercy. They showed no mercy. They dominated. Kendrick Davis did whatever he wanted to do. Same with, you know, with Montrezl Harrell. I really liked in the first half what Isaac Humphries did. I did tweet that out. I said, this version of Isaac Humphries where he's in attack mode, he's cutting hard to the basket, he's finishing strong. That's the Isaac Humphries I want to see consistently. Sometimes he tends to go off the boil a little bit, but he shows that it's possible, right? So there, and then obviously Dejan Vasiljevic come back and, you know, destroyed the Kings, and I know would have absolutely loved that, particularly against his best mate, Paul Smith, hitting those three triples to really kind of blow the game apart in that first half. But their top-end talent is outstanding. There's no question about that. They've got that big three, and then obviously Jarrell Martin hasn't been what we expected of him. But then you add Isaac Humphries into that list. Look, they've got a group that can score a hell of a lot of points. You know, we know that. And again, same story. With Perth, it's can they play defense at a reasonable level the rest of the way? And is that weekend after the players meeting and all that, players only meeting and all of that stuff, was that a sugar hit? There's people that aren't convinced about Adelaide still because they were really poor. Yeah, you know, let's face it, which necessitated the players coming together and having a good hard look at themselves. So that's the question for me. They are, you know, it's 7-6 for me. They're a team that could go on a run. Tasmania is a huge game for them coming up, and then Illawarra. And then they've got the next three games. I think the next three games will tell us about them. You know, if they all of a sudden, you know, lose to Tasmania, and they haven't been great on the road, Illawarra is maybe gettable even on the back end of that road double, given the fact that Illawarra hasn't been, you know, as dominant at home as you would expect this year. But then you go into the Lions Den at RAC Arena and look out. Then you got Cairns and you got Sydney. But I think the three, Tasmania, Illawarra, Perth, that's going to tell us really about where Adelaide stands this season.
So let's hit the picks for the next week. And we're not going to be going back into round picks for, let's see, when 17, probably round 17, I would say, is probably the next time we can do these.
I know, any it's crazy, sort of, isn't it? We're sort of in these split rounds at the moment, yeah.
Round order. And even then, 16 kind of bleeds into 17. So, and then 17 bleeds into 18. We're going to be doing it but week by week until further notice is what I'm trying to say. So we're at Monday night, which is a rare night off for the NBL. So
that's been, yep.
Take a breath and let's see what's going to happen from Monday to Monday. So, and it starts with Tuesday night. Illawarra, Tasmania, Wynn Entertainment Centre.
What a game. And obviously both teams coming off a loss. Illawarra coming off a loss that was one of the biggest upsets in league history. And I can say that, obviously. And it's easy to, you know, it's easy to do the whole recency bias thing. But, you know, they were, you know, you talk about gambling. They were like, what, 15-point underdogs in a two-horse race?
Yeah.
And I someone tweeted me that they actually backed them. Good luck to you, sir. As you said, Julian, you got any line on the old lotto numbers?
Yeah.
Jeez. Anyway, this is fascinating. Yeah, and I'm sure that Justin Tatum has been laying into his team without a doubt. The flip side is that Scott Roth wasn't particularly unhappy in the press conference about losing that game at home. And as he mentioned, it's been a phenomenal performance to win that eight straight before they lost their first game of the year. But I still think there's going to be a level of motivation for them. I'm going to pick Illawarra. I know that they've struggled, but again, I think Justin Tatum is going to absolutely give it to them at training. I'm sure, you know, and reinforcing those messages that he's talked about, that they have to care more. They have to play with it. They just have to play incredibly hard. They haven't won anything yet, let's face it. And I'm wondering if, you know, all the love that they've received before, after that five-game winning streak, kind of maybe got in their heads a bit collectively. So from that perspective, I think they've had those two home losses. I don't expect them to lose three straight. So it'll be close, but I think Illawarra gets the money.
I'm going with the Hawks, but not with any confidence at all. This is a game that Tasmania have historically gone in and won. These are the games they seem to love more than any other, especially after losing their first game in Hobart all season on the weekend. So I'm going with Illawarra, but it's a 51-49 sort of situation for me. This is going to be a cracker of a game. And if they drop this one, the Hawks, then all of a sudden,
yeah,
it's just one game back to everybody else.
100%. Yep.
You want to exactly keep that buffer, right. You want to win this one. It's a big, yep, big night for Illawarra. And for Tasmania, if they can win this, well, they're right in the mixer. If they drop this, then they're right back with South East Melbourne and one game away from Brisbane and Adelaide. So much on the line. So I love this time of year. This is going to be such a fun, yep, month. And then we get into the real business end, of course, with the playoffs.
100%.
It's a shame the next night. One half of it I'm looking forward to. Brisbane against New Zealand.
Hey, it's your mate Taco Fall, my mate too. And look, at the end of the day, he was great. You know, I mean.
Yeah, he was.
He was. And look, I've said before, again, I don't think they can win with him. You know, I still don't believe that because, as I mentioned earlier, I think with him, you've got to make certain allowances. And that could potentially be to the detriment of the team. Now, he was excellent with 28 points and a bunch of rebounds and I think he had three or four block shots, but he's limited in what he can do for you. But if they can, you know, get the ball to him enough in places where he's most comfortable, he's going to do some damage just from his sheer size.
Look, the thing is with Taco, I mean, this guy played in the NBA. I don't care under what circumstances. If you get to the NBA at all, obviously you got some ability. They don't just put anyone on the street.
No, true. Yeah, true.
But it's my thing has always been with the fit. It's like putting a line in the Shamu, yeah, show at SeaWorld. It just doesn't fit. And, yeah, he does not fit this program.
But yeah, and people will look at the numbers and say, oh, my God, you know, here comes Taco and everything else. But, Yeah, my old thing is, can he help New Zealand win games? And I don't think, he's had one game where he did, but other than that, I don't see it. This is obviously a must-win for Brisbane. They've got to get this thing done. If they don't, you can pretty much write them off. As I said to you before, Julian, I don't think they've got enough the rest of the way. But yeah, at least get this W at home, which they should do, and I think pretty comfortably, especially with New Zealand still without Parker Jackson Cartwright.
Speaking of which, Parker Jackson Cartwright, what's your take on what we've seen over the last little bit, social media wise? It may or may not have been a tweet saying he's out. What is your take on where Parker Jackson Cartwright sits within the Breakers and if indeed he is going to split at the end of the season?
Yeah, he may very well. I mean, obviously there was that talk around Montrezl Harrell after the affray at JCA. So, how seriously do you take Twitter, I guess? How seriously do you take social media about things like that? And even coming from the horse's mouth, as it were, I'd hate to see him go. Look, he's had an amazing career in Europe. I mean, I mentioned before he was MVP of the Bundesliga in Germany. So he will have no problem finding another team to play for, clearly. But he's added, I love the guy, and look, I know him a little bit and he's a terrific person. So I'd hate to kind of, I know he was a bit hot-headed the other day and all that stuff, but that's just him. That's his competitive nature, quite frankly. So bottom line is I'd hate to see him go. That's the bottom line, because I think someone like that is always great for the rest of the league. And even if you're not a fan of the Breakers, just watching this kid play, this little guy that just can dominate against the giants of the NBL. Yeah, it's great to see.
Sydney and Melbourne's always a big game. Doesn't matter when, doesn't matter where. Thursday night in Sydney, Qdos Bank Arena. Man, I wish I was there to see it. I love this contest. And this is going to be big. It's box office. Doesn't matter what the situation is. Then you add in the fact that this is for second place. And Melbourne may very well be playing for their top two lives when things are all said and done. Jeez, this is a huge game.
Yeah, I mean, I think for both teams, and we've have actually talked about this quite a bit. It's massive, and the Kings still not 100% convinced about them at home. I think they have been better on the road. There's going to be it's at the point of diminishing returns, really, these fourth quarter comebacks. I mean, I say that, but then they're likely to do it again, because they just have a way that they figure it all out. Melbourne have won four of the last five against the Kings. One at Qdos, and the other, the Kings had the win at Qdos last year in round 17. Melbourne's won both games on the road, one by 4 points, one by three. So they're very evenly matched, obviously. But this Melbourne team isn't what that team was at the moment, anyway. I think, obviously, the big key is what they do with Golding. I think, Adelaide kind of showed, Latt Mayen face guarding him constantly. I think we're going to see a lot of that from Bol Quol. I think, and probably that was what has been missing for the Kings from a defensive standpoint, even though I think Bol's been overall, not the impact player that people expected, particularly given he's a marquee. So, yeah, I mean, it's look, it could go either way. I'm going to go with the Kings. They're in some semblance of form. They've showed that resiliency and that toughness. Obviously, big problem they're going to have is with defending the bigs. Excuse the pun, but that's what's going to happen, because they are horrifically small, and particularly with Leo Pepe out of the lineup with that hamstring injury, not expected to play. So the onus is going to be on Xavier Cooks and Cam Oliver to kind of hold the fort, and Kuat Noi to be that energizer bunny that he has been. But ultimately, what Jack White are we going to see? We talked about him before, and he's going to be huge for them if he can hit some threes, rebound, play that great defense of his. How they deal with Jalen Adams, and obviously the unknown about Turner and what he brings to the table as a new import, and how quickly he can make an impact. But with that all said, give me Sydney. I think it'll be close. That pretty much stating the bleeding obvious, but in the end, I do like the Kings just a little bit more right now.
Yeah, the Turner signing's certainly going to be the interesting point as far as the reaction amongst the NBL sphere. I know Damon Lau has said that, quote, it could wreck everything. The decision of whether or not to go with a big, to go with another point guard.
Yeah, see, this is the thing, right? People don't get this. Okay. You talk about what do the Kings need? And a lot of people have come out and said, well, they need a big. You know how hard it is to get an impact big at this stage of the season? It's very, very difficult. It's much, much easier to go and get a backcourt player. So I'm a bit tired of this whole, oh, the Kings should have gone for a big. Well, who's out there that's available that could make a genuine impact to this roster? I mean, what you're looking at is really more someone like Ian Hummer. No disrespect to Ian. I really like him and what he brings to the table. But the reality is, if you're going to go out, if you're the Sydney Kings and you're going to go out and get another import, and that import is going to be a big, it's really tough. So, yeah, I completely disagree with Damon Lowry. There's a surprise. But, it just annoys me a bit because look, it's not understanding how it works. Let's face it. I mean, they've got great connections through Andrew Bogut and Luke Longley over in the NBA. But anybody worth his salt as a, let's say, a 6'8 to 6'11 big that can score, rebound, and defend is playing in the G League with a nod to potentially, you know, making another step up into the NBA. Or they're being paid $1 million in China, Japan, in as far as Asia is concerned, and then obviously Europe as well, playing big, you know, paying big money. So, yeah, I think we need to put that to bed, quite frankly. I am curious to see how it works because, as I said before, Jalen is very much a high-volume player, and he's always been great with the ball in his hands. And I think, you know, Gorgeous basically looking at it and saying, you know, I need to give this guy a bit of a break. So hopefully for their sake, Turner, you know, steps up and can be productive. I don't think you should ask too much of him in the opening game. But and I don't know how long he'll play. I would suspect probably no more than 10 to 15 minutes initially. But even with that, I still think the Kings get the W.
Yeah, I'm going with Sydney on their home floor to win this one. The way things are trending, reading the tea leaves, it'd be a massive, massive overcome if Melbourne United are able to steal this one on the road with the form that they've been in compared to how Sydney have been, especially after that fourth quarter against the Phoenix, then parlaying that into a fourth quarter against the Brisbane Bullets. Rivalry game for them. And keep in mind how things went the last time that these two teams played back at John Cain Arena last year. Last December, I think it was December 1st, the Kings owe United one, I think. This is where it's going to come. Friday night, Tasmania 36ers, My State Bank Arena.
Another sellout. I think, what is it? It's going to be 52 straight or something, which is unbelievable. I mean, how much do we love My State Bank Arena? You and I obviously have been there and have enjoyed, you know, the incredible atmosphere. And they'll be pumped. I mean, obviously, there'll be a lot of eyeballs on Montrezl Harrell and what he does and how he responds to what I'm sure will be the fans putting some heat on. And we've seen before with him that it sometimes when it gets to that point, he kind of goes over the top and goes sort of negative rather than the, you know, the dancing guy, the high-fiving the kids and all that sort of stuff that he does so well at home. On the road, not so much, as we've seen. So that'll be an interesting watch. This is going to be a great game. Again, Tasmania on this, you know, pretty tough little road home double of theirs, coming up against an Adelaide team that, like the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, who pretty much, you know, were too good for them, can bring a lot of firepower to bear, as we've seen. You know, I mean, Kendrick Davis against Jordan Crawford when Jordan gets on the court. Obviously, you know, Shorty Mack as well is going to be a huge key. He's got to defend Davis because Davis has just been brilliant. And really, you know, an MVP candidate, full, you know, no question about it. So, yeah, well, this is tough for me. Give me the Tasmania. You know, they don't lose two in a row at home very often, so I think the Jackies will get the job done.
Yeah, Jack Jumpers for mine. I think they'll just be too strong down the stretch, and they'll stretch it out to about a 6 to 8 point win. Hawks Breakers Saturday night at the Wynn Entertainment Centre. Jeez, the Hawks would want to win this.
Yeah, 100%. And their second home game the end of round 15 and into round 16. So, yeah, not to spend too much time on it. I think it'll blow New Zealand out. I think Interesting, because he's always interesting. He's a great story, is Taco, and how they defend him, and how Sam Froehlich, needs to bounce back after a disappointing performance against the Taipans, and I'm sure he will. I just look at New Zealand without PJC again. Look, Matt Mooney did a fine job, and you could argue that, him fouling out under slightly controversial circumstances against the Wildcats was a big reason why they couldn't complete the comeback and get that W. But I'll again, he's going, he and Mitch McCarron, who I've always had a lot of time for, but Mitch at this point of his career is not a starting point guard. Let's be brutally honest about that. So I think Kellen Harvey do an absolute number on New Zealand, and I think Illawarra really dominates and wins this pretty comfortably.
Phoenix home game against the Bullets, this one in Gippsland, one of the regional
Yeah.
venues, and the regional game for the Phoenix, their first of four home games for the month. They got the three games at the State Basketball Centre. They take this one out to Gippsland. They've been strong out there.
Yeah, they have. They've been very strong. Again, I'll probably not spend too much time in this one. I think the Phoenix win this, and I think they win this easily. I think it's going to be a sellout. The place will be rocking. Southeast Melbourne's playing really good D at the moment. That's a credit to Josh King. Offensively, they can put 100 up at the drop of a hat. They're just a great offensive unit. So they've just added, Josh has pretty much come in and just added some offense, some defense rather, to that offense. So yeah, I think the Phoenix, and I think it's pretty comfortable.
So then we switch to a game that is going to have a lot of intrigue and a lot of interest around these parts. This is going to be a fantastic spectacle. Jack Jumpers Wildcats in Hobart, MyState Bank Arena.
Yeah. Again, you sort of talk about the Jackies and three massive games for them this week. I mean, obviously we talked about tomorrow, and we're recording this on a Monday. So, today, for those of you listening to us on a Tuesday. So yeah, it's fascinating because, Illawarra, then Adelaide at home, and now Perth, a team that we've just said is very quietly making a really impressive run. And defensively, again, how do you stop Ross Cotton? And what's that matchup from Tasmania's point of view? They couldn't do it with the Phoenix, particularly Derek Walton Jr. This is a different kind of challenge, obviously. They've got the size, Perth. They've got the athleticism. They've got, more than enough scoring. But having said all of that, I'm going to give it to Tasmania at home. I think they just get so much from that crowd. It's an emotional thing. The whole defend the island business, and Scott Roth pumping them up before and after the games. I think that they'll ride that crowd. It's going to be one hell of a battle. And don't be surprised to see Bryce go for some massive numbers again. I mean, it's easy to say based on what he's done of late, but yeah, even against a really, really quality defensive unit. Even with that, I think Tasmania will just it's they'll just get past Perth, but it wouldn't surprise me to see the Wildcats get the W, mind you.
Sydney and Cairns on Sunday afternoon in Sydney.
I see my guy Adam Ford, which I'm looking forward to, and my other guy Alexander Higgins-Titcher, who I spoke about earlier. And I love watching Taron Armstrong. I'm a huge fan, as most people would know. The Kings, it's one of those have to have it. You know what I mean? They have to have it. If not to say that they're not legitimate or whatever, but it's one of those games, and Illawarra found this out the hard way, that those are the games you've just got to have. Even though Cairns will, that they will approach that with a nothing to lose attitude. They'll be fearless. They'll be in attack mode, but Sydney just way too strong in the end.
So that's up till Sunday, and then quickly touch on the Monday games. Breakers and Melbourne Monday week.
Yeah, another gotta have it game for the for Melbourne United, no doubt.
And then the Sixers and the Hawks in Adelaide.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, that is really interesting. Adelaide, when they played the last time they played at home, they were brilliant against Melbourne, but the previous they were abominable. So it's like I said to you, Julian, this is one of those games that's going to show us where they're at. I'll give it to Adelaide for at least another week. To get that W at home.
I'm going to go with the Hawks. I think this is one for them. Their road form.
Yeah, they've been good on the road, yeah. No doubt.
I'm going with the Hawks to get the W in this one. So there you have it. There's the next week for you in the NBL, and that will take us through to the latter half of round 16. It's all over the shop, but we love it. Basketball just about every night. It's a big time of year, and this is where you've got to make bank in the run into the playoffs. Matty, you've done well to get to the end, my friend. Go rest up.
I don't know how. You're going to have a hell of a time editing this because it's been, you know, mute, cough. But, yeah, so playing hurt at the moment. But as you mentioned, you know, it's such an exciting time of year, right? So we love, you know, bringing this podcast to you. I've said that before. It's so much fun to do, to find out how many people are listening to us as well, and the feedback that I get from a lot of, you know, people in basketball across the board is fantastic. So, playing hurt, but got through it. And unfortunately, Julian's going to be working till midnight, probably cutting out half of my coughs and mutes.
This will be an epic to try and put together. But if you're hearing this, it means it's been done. So we'll be back again next week after what I'm sure will be another frenetic, crazy week, another couple of upsets that we don't see coming, and who knows what the state of the table will be when we speak to you next. Thanks for your company on this week's edition of The Roundtable. Stay safe. Thanks for your company, as always. We'll catch you again next week.